tune out of the anti-white system and tune in to the pro-white system.
Welcome to the Daily Nationalist. Today's date is a Thursday, the 23rd of April, 2026, and you're listening to me, Sven Longshanks, streaming at RadioAlbion.com. It's the 23rd of April, which means it is St. George's Day, the patron saint of England, and also the patron saint of Moscow, which most people, I guess, are probably unaware of. So happy Saints Day to our listeners in Moscow and our listeners in England. And as it's Thursday today, it means we have with us geopolitical analyst Dr. Matthew Raphael Johnson from RusJournal.org. Matt, good day, sir. How are you doing?
Oh, I'm doing very well, thank God. Yeah, you know, in the double eagle, usually St. George is depicted, you know, in the middle of it. So, yes, it's a very powerful idea. St. George's is one of my favorites, and I'm happy you mentioned him.
Well, it's interesting that it's the same patron saint in Moscow as well as in England, when, you know, you have all this animosity at the moment between Britain and between Russia, and it really doesn't get mentioned. And I think that, I mean, partly that might be part of the reason why Russians used to be Anglophiles, didn't they? They used to have a soft spot for Britain. I don't know if they still do. It's no longer reciprocated, but I think there used to be quite a bit of friendship between Russia and England. Am I correct in thinking that, Matt?
Well, not on a political level, but sometimes on a religious level. You know, those who left the Anglican Church to become Orthodox were very attracted to Russia, even if they did the Western Rite. You know, the people like Palmer and so many others corresponded with the Slavophiles. I think that Komiakov thought that old England was an ideal Christian society. But in terms of politics, Britain has always seen, the British elite, I should say, has always seen Russia as an enemy, same thing as Germany. And when those two countries began to develop rapidly together, they needed a massive war to keep that from happening. They needed somehow to get them to fight each other, despite not having a whole lot of reasons to fight each other, which was diabolical. So politically, no, it's been at least, you know, even from the reign of Ivan the Terrible on, it's been tense, if not absolutely violent.
Well, they're obviously not getting on well at the moment, but there are calls from the rest of Europe to be more friendly to Russia, particularly coming from Bulgaria. And we've just had a recent election in Bulgaria, and I'm being told on the news over here by the BBC and by GB News that it's a new nationalist politician. So I questioned that with one of our Bulgarian listeners, and it seems he's possibly more of a populist than a nationalist, because I don't think he's heard him say anything too much about immigration at the moment. But we're going to be looking at this election today, and we're going to be looking at this new populist politician. The title of our notes today is A Victory for Populism in Bulgaria. And we're actually taking this article from Zero Hedge, which we haven't done for a while. Despite Orbán's loss in Hungary earlier this month, Europe's populist right is not dead by a long shot. Official results released on Monday show former President Rumen Radev's Progressive Bulgaria Coalition capturing roughly 44.6 to 44.7% of the vote in Sunday's snap parliamentary elections, delivering an absolute majority of approximately 130 to 135 seats in the 240-seat parliament. It marks the first time since 1997 that a single political force in Bulgaria will be able to govern without coalition horse trading. Radev, who stepped down from the presidency in January to lead the new party, wasted no time celebrating outside his headquarters. This is a victory of hope over distrust, a victory of freedom over fear, and finally a victory of morality, he declared, adding that voters had rejected the arrogance of old parties and didn't bend to their lies and manipulations. The rout was total for the old guard. GERB, led by veteran ex-Prime Minister Boyko Borisov, was left in the dust at roughly 12-15%, while the pro-European reformist We Continue the Change, Democratic Bulgaria, the PPDB coalition, trailed even further behind. Turnout climbed modestly to around 47%, reflecting voter fatigue after 8 elections in 5 years, but still signalling a clear mandate for change amidst widespread frustration with corruption, graft, and economic stagnation. Radev, a Eurosceptic former fighter pilot, built his campaign around calls for pragmatic ties with Moscow, resumption of Russian energy supplies, and an end to military aid for Ukraine. He has repeatedly criticised EU overreach on green energy mandates, sanctions policies, and what he describes as moral posturing in a world without rules. While analysts note that he is unlikely to jeopardise the flow of EU funds that sustain Bulgaria's economy, the result installs a distinctly Russia-friendly government at the heart of the European Union's southeastern flank, a shift that will draw close scrutiny in Brussels, Washington and Kiev. I'm quite surprised at the language here. I mean, referring to your competitors as liars, I think it said here, didn't bend to their lies and the manipulations of the old parties. It does seem as if there's a lot of animosity here between the politicians, a lot of mention of corruption, and yet this guy was the former president. So he's been involved in politics before. So why do you think the people are now trusting this man when he was always the president before, and now he's the prime minister? They think something different is going to happen. Give us some more information on this, Matt, would you please?
Yes, no problem. We've dealt with Bulgaria a few times before on the show. I cannot believe that Boyko Borisov is still around. His life is like a sitcom, politically speaking. The concept of the EU funds that maintain the Bulgarian economy, that exists only because Bulgaria is a part of the EU in the first place. The EU took over whatever industry it had, certainly took over its oil industry, and then condemned them for building nuclear plants. You know, they collapsed economically when they became a part of the EU. They didn't have any of the standards that the EU requires. They're not part of the Eurozone. I don't know why he continues to say we're going to be a part of the EU, you know, despite all of this. But I love how, 47% is this huge turnout in Bulgaria. I remember in 2007, it was about 27%. In 2009, it was 38%. I mean, these are elections all the time because the coalitions are evenly matched and nothing gets done. And the fraud, of course. Back in 2014, I wrote a paper on him. I called it the tragicomic reign of Boyko Borisov. That somehow he keeps getting elected despite having zero support in the society. Back then, his party was the Citizens for the European Development of Bulgaria. I think his poll ratings were about 11-12%, but somehow got 50% of the vote during the election. Which, of course, was a travesty. But back in, I think it was 2013, he had to flee the country. I remember seeing the pictures of him fleeing the country in his pajamas. to a plane waiting for him. And then together, you know, every time I see him, there's another a new party. Citizens for the European Development of Bulgaria was another one. But making matters worse, the lev is pegged to the euro, the Bulgarian currency, which distorts the Bulgarian economy. And, you know, who wants to be attached to the indebted and financially unstable EU? There's always been very low growth. But back then, you know, the former Soviet high level of education, especially in the sciences, was their biggest benefit. Again, that was 10 years ago. But Bulgaria has no market in the West. The only reason that they became a part of the EU was to keep them from Russia. Bulgarian oil and her longstanding alliance with Moscow were the only reasons, excuse me, that the EU rushed Bulgaria into its fold. As energy prices went up, Bulgaria's economy was fragile. It was disconnected from Russia. So in essence, Bulgaria was guaranteed international respectability, quote unquote, by EU membership in exchange for her sovereignty, her oil, her gas, and her government's domestic popularity. The EU has brought zero positive to Bulgaria. And given her energy policy, membership impoverished much of it. Bulgaria has been forced to export her domestic resources. It's a carnival. The EU demanded it, the oil be routed to them. So the situation has not gotten much better since then. And Borisov somehow, despite never having much support, is still around. And I guess the regime says they could trust him. I'd be shocked if his support in reality was any more than 5 or 10%. Clearly the establishment parties have no support. But actually, as far as Bulgaria is concerned, a 47% turnout, that's something. That's pretty high for them. They're just sick and tired of it. Bulgaria is I think there'll be one place where a military coup would be very popular.
So you're saying there that the oil was diverted to the EU. I mean, I wasn't aware that Bulgaria actually had oil. Is that what you were saying? Bulgaria has its own oil, or was it originally relying on its oil and gas from Russia? Do you know?
No, there are oil fields in Bulgaria. Yeah, and that's part of the reason that the EU wanted it. Romania, of course, is a big oil producer, and. But even more importantly than that, keeping Bulgaria away from Moscow was the only reason that they just rushed her in. But demanding that Bulgaria and Russia be enemies, where for so many centuries they were anything but, just makes it very artificial. The media is controlled by Western-owned firms. I remember at least a few years ago, the only speeches that you could hear in Bulgarian media were from Borisov and his friends. So a victory like this is significant because it breaks the almost 50-50 paralysis of Bulgarian politics. And being a fighter pilot, there's very few of those. And a fighter pilot, is an extraordinary man, at least physically, and to some extent mentally. I don't think anything really can rattle him. These poor states. I mean, and now Russia has no interest in Bulgaria either. So being a part of the EU has left her completely, isolated. And the only reason that there are these funds that, quote unquote, sustain Bulgaria's economy is because she was a part of the EU. It's been an unmitigated disaster. And I've read in certain articles that Bulgaria's economy has been wonderful over the last few years, and it's simply not true. Well, it's not true. And they do manipulate the figures, of course. Unemployment has been fairly high. As you know, essentially, they're bribed to stay in the European Union. I think there's a lot of vote rigging there. I think there's a lot of organized crime there. And the fact that Radev got this level of support is significant. I guarantee you, in reality, it would be much higher. Now, as far as nationalism is concerned, I've heard him say a few things against immigration. I'm not sure why he doesn't promote it more. Well, he is a military man. That would be extremely popular. But the other problem is that, you know, you still have the population laws, which has to be changed. You know, there's not that many people there, and it's a shame. Bulgaria is a heroic people, in my opinion. So you know, this might be the start of something, and I don't know if we're going to see sanctions on Bulgaria. But I think Radev is, if he continues this, what he's saying during the campaign, he may be a very popular man.
Well, I'm just a little bit confused by this, because if Bulgaria has its own oil, most countries which have access to their own oil are wealthy countries. And yet Bulgaria's main export is Bulgarian people coming to the north of Europe, west of Europe, because of the exchange rate, because the exchange rate is low. So if Bulgaria's got oil, why isn't Bulgaria a more advanced and wealthy nation?
Because, as I said, the EU took it over, and Western firms took over whatever oil and gas that they produce, not just production, but also, you know, transportation and purification. Bulgaria couldn't compete with Western firms in that regard, and they forced this green energy mandate on them. They were even opposed to her building nuclear plants. You know, she can't win. Bulgaria can't win no matter what she does. If she wasn't a part of the EU, Bulgaria would be a fairly well-off country.
Interesting. So now there is some pushback against that. Getting back to Zero Hedge here. As we highlighted ahead of the vote, Radev's campaign leaned heavily into criticism of European Union overreach, particularly its green energy obsession, sanctions regime, and moral posturing in a world without rules. He has repeatedly called for improved relations with Moscow, resumption of Russian energy flows, and an end to military aid for Ukraine. While analysts stress he is unlikely to risk the flow of EU funds that have propped up Bulgaria's economy, his victory installs a distinctly Russia-friendly voice at the heart of the EU's southeastern flank, a development that will be watched closely in Brussels, Washington and Kiev. The result hands Radev the chance to form a stable government on his own terms, something Bulgarian voters have craved after repeated rounds of political paralysis. Whether he delivers the pragmatism he promised, or whether entrenched interests and EU pressure blunt his agenda, remains to be seen. For now, though, the message from Sofia is unmistakable. The old system has been decisively rejected, and Bulgaria is charting a new course under its former pro-Russian president. Just as Europe's neoliberal establishment was celebrating the downfall of Hungary's Orbán and his replacement with another hardline anti-immigrationist, it got some bad news on Sunday, as Bulgaria's pro-Russian former president Ruman Radev was set for a runaway victory in the election and may even secure a parliamentary majority in the poorest EU state. Exit polls showed, potentially ending years of weak coalition governments and altering the European Union members' foreign policy. This marks one of the strongest results by a single party in a generation. Sideline a party that has ruled on and off for decades and may see an end to the instability that has resulted in 8 elections in 5 years. Progressive Bulgaria won decisively. This is a victory of hope over distrust, a victory of freedom over fear, and finally, if you will, a victory of morality, Radev said of the exit poll results during a press conference. Radev, a Eurosceptic and former fighter pilot who opposes military support for Ukraine's war effort against Moscow, stepped down from the presidency in January to run in the parliamentary election, which comes after mass protests forced out the previous government in December. According to Reuters, Radev rode a wave of frustration with political instability in the Balkan country of 6.5 million people, where voters are sick of corruption and veteran parties that have dominated politics for decades. Alpha Research put turnout at 47%, with 1 hour of voting to go, up from the 39% total in the last election in October 2024. There is now an opportunity for the things people have been hoping to see change to actually become visible. Evelina Koliva, a manager at digital marketing company in Sofia, told Reuters. During his campaign, Radev drew comparisons with Hungary's pro-Kremlin former Prime Minister, Viktor Orban, when he talked about improving relations with Moscow and resuming the free flow of Russian oil and gas into Europe. He also criticised the EU for relying too heavily on renewable energy. It is not clear how much his views will impact the foreign policy of Bulgaria, a NATO member on the EU's southeastern flank, which joined the Eurozone in January, a move Radev has criticised. He said he would be willing to work on judicial reform with the pro-European reformist We Continue the Change Democratic Bulgaria coalition, which came third in the Alpha Research exit polls with 11.3%. A minority government was also an option in the 240-seat parliament, Radev said. Bulgaria will make efforts to continue its European path, he said, but a strong Bulgaria and a strong Europe needs pragmatism, because Europe has fallen victim to its own ambition to be a moral leader in a world without rules. GERB's Borisov appeared to concede in a post on Facebook, but added a note of caution. To win the elections is one thing, to govern is quite another. Elections decide who comes first, but negotiations will decide who governs. I mean, it seems to me as if that's a bit of a threat, as if he's planning on throwing a spanner in the works and is going to cause problems with the new leader, Radev, forming a coalition. But is he going to have to form a coalition, or has he got sufficient enough of a majority not to have to form a coalition? I mean, what do you make of that, Matt?
Well, that article was written as the election was going on. It was a lot of wishful thinking. The EU, of course, they did everything they could to manipulate the election results. The fact that Borisov got the votes he did is incredible. He's a very, very unpopular man. He's a poster boy for corruption, and yet he's still there. I can't believe he's still there. But you know, economically speaking, it's Bulgarian refining capabilities that made her a very important player. She has no control over that anymore. That's strictly in EU hands, and that was a huge threat to the European Union in the beginning. You know, the stronger ties with China, it should be another part of this agenda. But Borisov, you know, they keep promoting this guy that you know, the EU can clearly trust. And he knows that whatever he does against, you know, if he turns out to be a true nationalist, whatever he does against them is going to be supported by the European Union and the regime in general, the ruling classes in general. And the worst thing that a struggling economy can do at this point is bringing in more migrants, because that's simply a weapon. And I really hope that both Bulgaria and Hungary maintain that course. I've heard Radev talk about, you know, immigration once or twice. But you never know if that's just for popularity or if that's a true. But, you know, he's a military man. It's very difficult for me to see him as just a tool of the EU. He's not ideal, but he's certainly the best Bulgaria has at the moment. I've written quite a bit on Bulgarian politics. It's been a little while. But I remember, actually, we before you went away, we talked about the stuffing of ballot boxes caught on video from the party Citizens for European Development of Bulgaria. It didn't matter. You know, the election got the seal of approval from the EU regardless, despite the fact that, you know, it was clearly rigged. Despite the fact that it was actually on video, this goes back a few years. He said, "Oh, the elections are perfectly legitimate." Right now, well, I shouldn't say right now. As of a few years ago, and I don't think much has changed. There's a poll that says 76% of Bulgarians question the basic assumptions of liberal democracy, and this is why I keep saying that a military coup there to turn Bulgaria back to Russia and become a part of a partner with Russia and China is a very good thing. I'm not sure what Bulgaria would do about that, but whoever would pull that off would be a very, very popular man. You know, Bulgaria has been struggling since she's been part of the European Union. It's one of the most corrupt states in the EU. It's not quite like Ukraine, but it's in the same neighborhood. So, that's my, in my opinion, that's really the ultimate solution to the problems. But the fact that you have someone who can actually rule without forming a coalition is significant. What the EU is going to do about that, well, we probably know. I mean, sanctions are probably on the way. I don't know what that's going to affect, how nasty that's going to be. But there's a reason that 76% of Bulgarians reject the assumptions of liberal democracy. I think that's very significant.
Well, again, they're a former part of the Soviet bloc, basically, the same as Poland and Hungary. And Poland and Hungary have both rejected liberal values. These countries that were formerly part of the Soviet bloc, they've all managed to keep their traditionalism, basically, by being kept separate from Western liberalism. So, I mean, that doesn't surprise me that a large portion of them reject it. And it's obviously a good thing. And I hope that he is one of these people. Well, the cost of living has become a particular issue since Bulgaria adopted the euro. The previous government fell amidst protests against a new budget proposing tax increases and higher social security contributions. Radev has made tackling this corruption the central pillar of his campaign, vowing to dismantle the mafia oligarchic power structure that he says has run Bulgaria since the fall of communism and throughout its EU membership. While his Progressive Bulgaria coalition was founded less than 2 months ago, and yet he's won the election. I mean, that's quite some going. Radev is an established figure in Bulgarian politics, having served as president from 2017 until his resignation in February. During his presidency, Radev clashed with Borisov over corruption and withdrew confidence from the then prime minister's government in 2020. So that gives us a clue as to why he's liked. He obviously withdrew his confidence, pulled out from the government because it was so corrupt some years ago. Radev is a vocal opponent of the European Union's Ukraine policy. He opposes Bulgaria's self-imposed embargo on Russian energy. Well, that's got to be hurting the country. Vetoed an agreement to provide Ukraine with armoured vehicles in 2022, blamed Ukraine for starting the conflict with Russia, and told Ukrainian leader Vladimir Zelensky to his face in 2023 that there was no military solution to the conflict and that more and more weapons will not solve it. I mean, this man is quite outspoken. He seems more outspoken has more courage in speaking up about this than Viktor Orban does. Seizing on Radev's opposition to Ukraine aid, Reuters, the Associated Press, and the Washington Post have all described him as Bulgaria's pro-Russian former president. The NATO-funded Atlantic Council has gone further, suggesting that Bulgaria could replace Hungary as Putin's proxy inside the EU. The framing is misleading. Orbán was a well-entrenched incumbent and a conservative who ruled with a parliamentary supermajority for much of his 16 consecutive years in office. Radev has run a populist campaign going up against a party that has dominated post-communist politics in Bulgaria. Orbán was the Hungarian establishment. Radev is seeking to break the Bulgarian establishment and expose its relationships with Brussels to a populace that held mass demonstrations against corruption through the winter. It seems there's been quite a lot of protests against this corruption over there in Hungary. I mean, I don't think it was just this winter. I think before I went away, there was issues that were happening in Hungary, and all through that time. I mean, what do they say? 8 elections in the past 5 years, or something ridiculous like that. Now, at least it finally does seem as if they've got somebody there that a large majority of the country do support. As you say, Matt, he's a fighter pilot. I mean, he's got to be an alpha male to be a fighter pilot, physically and mentally. And he sounds like somebody that you want in that position, somebody who is going to be a prime example of a human being, a proper prime minister, rather than middle management or just a yes man. I'm glad you picked this today, Matt. It is encouraging to hear all this. I mean, what do you make of what's being said here and the links to NATO? Because Bulgaria is a part of NATO, isn't it? I mean, surely they won't be happy about Bulgaria being more friendly towards Russia.
Yeah, Bulgaria is a part of NATO for the same reason. She's a part of the EU, just to keep her away from Russia. With the anomaly of World War I, Bulgaria and Russia have been, you know, natural allies for a very long time. There's absolutely no reason for the two countries to be opposed unless it's forced on them from an outside power. I believe that pro-Russian views, now I don't really trust polls, but pro-Russian views inside Bulgaria are fairly low. But I would say that that's the result of brainwashing over years and years and years. Manipulation of the history books in school and everything else more than actual reality. But when you're going up against someone like Borisov, it's, you know, the story just writes itself. The EU, it's very easy just to list the what the EU has done to Bulgaria, how much easier it would be with their so-called pragmatic approach. You know, using the word pragmatism doesn't mean much. Here, you know, he's got to spell that out more. At least Borisov has his agenda totally out there, and it's been absolutely destructive. You know, low growth continues to be the biggest problem. It's been the biggest problem for years. Products fashioned, you know, as I've said, I've written on this many times. By the former Soviet states, don't really have much of a market in the West, but there is interest in the East. Now, being a NATO member, you have to have full interchangeability in every respect with all other NATO powers. And I don't know if Bulgaria has that. That would cost a fortune. Iceland's a NATO member. Albania is a NATO member. These barely have militaries. It's just simply, you know, increasing the number so that they can be more easily controlled. You know, but the economic future, like it or not, is in the East. Why anyone would want to peg their currency or even become a part of the Eurozone in the most unstable period in European economic history recently. And the minute she went into the EU, that fragile economy went into a sharp decline. But that meant that Brussels needed this dependent group of corrupt politicians connected with organized crime there, Mogilevic in particular, who does have a presence in Bulgaria. Is necessary to maintain them. The fact that, you know, Borisov just, 10 years ago went fleeing for his life in his pajamas to get away from the crowds who despised him, and he's still there. you know, when Borisov was prime minister, the IMF and the EU was appointing members of his cabinet, which is typical, you know, for indebted countries. Bulgaria has a negative balance of trade, and has had for quite a while, but she doesn't really, she shouldn't. But this is a result of being part of the European Union. This is again another. Now I'm a little bit worried the lack of alarm. I mean, yeah, there's been some nasty rhetoric, but the lack of alarm of this election worries me a little bit. Unless they're just being very secretive about what they're going to do. I think that. Nationalism works pretty much everywhere. But for a relatively small country like Bulgaria, there can't be autarkic. They need the assistance of a friendly body, and the EU is anything but a friendly body. Their economy for decades was connected with the East. And to force it to change to the West just means total impoverishment. And that's exactly what's happened here. His confrontation with Zelensky, he didn't say a single thing that was incorrect. You buy my book on the Ukraine war, it goes into painstaking detail for all of these points. There's no reason for him not to be pro-Russian. Somehow, you know, in the EU, in the West in general, the regime, pro-Russia is this terrible insult. But there's no reason to be anti-Russia, especially in a place like Bulgaria. This man won his party won the parliamentary elections under a fairly strict censorship regime. So his popularity is much higher than the electoral results would suggest. You know, Putin's never had a proxy in the EU. This is just simply common sense talk. Ukraine did start the conflict with Russia. She was going to invade at NATO's demand the breakaway Eastern republics. And the bloodshed would have been incredibly nasty. That's why Russia invaded, just barely before the invasion was still. So this was purely preemptive on Russia's part. That's what he's talking about, and he should know, being a military man. And of course, there's no military solution to the conflict. Ukraine has lost 2 million boys and men. A few more tanks and weapons are not going to solve anything. They just don't have the manpower anymore. Zelensky, and why he's even talking to him, whose presidential powers have run out 2 years ago. There's nothing legitimate about that system at all. Even if his election was legitimate, the system isn't, because of how they came to power. Armored vehicles in 2022, armored vehicles going into Ukraine just get vaporized. There is no military. So everything he said to Zelensky is absolutely true. And given Zelensky's total instability, mental instability, God knows what he's plotting. Ukraine really isn't it's not an independent country. It's a semi-colony of the U.S. But they're resorting to terrorism now everywhere. That's all they have left. And that may be part of the threat that you mentioned here. I think that it is a threat, very very heavily veiled. But Ukraine is using terrorism everywhere. That's the only thing it has. The U.S. has been doing the same thing. So Israel, of course, have done it for years, destroying civilian targets. Southern Lebanon is flattened and destroyed. So that's nothing new. So I think it is a threat. And I think it's something that Radev needs to take very seriously.
Well, just bringing up the euro there and them joining the eurozone. And I can remember when they joined the EU, and that was quite some years ago, and the worry was that they joined at the same time as Romania, and there'd be lots of cheap labour getting into Europe. And I remember them saying then, but they won't be joining the euro yet for another 6 years or another 8 years. So I should imagine that that was talked about and had been planned for a long time before all the problems with Ukraine have happened. So I should imagine they had to join the eurozone because the levers have been put in place to join the eurozone quite some years ago. I don't think that was something that was just decided, you know, in January when they joined it, if you see what I mean.
Oh, yeah.
Something they've been looking forward to for a long time.
Yes.
Well, what both figures, that's Radev and Orban, have in common is their opposition to the EU's continued bankrolling of the Ukraine conflict and the bloc's federalist overreach. Like Orban, Radev backs pragmatic and neutral relations with Russia. This is not an unpopular position in Bulgaria. According to a 2025 poll, 31% of Bulgarians view Russia positively, while less than a quarter hold a positive view of Ukraine. The EU has already intervened in the election by activating the same censorship tools it deployed in France, Germany, Hungary, Moldova, and Romania to stifle support for Eurosceptic populists. At the request of Gurov, and I believe Gurov was the caretaker prime minister, the European Commission activated its rapid response system, which forces social media platforms to remove content flagged by Brussels fact checkers earlier this month. And we spoke about this rapid response system when it was being used in Hungary. As was the case in Hungary, the European Commission's decision to activate the RRS was justified by reports that Bulgaria faces sustained Russian information manipulation pressure. The Commission did not mention that these reports were created by an EU-funded think tank in Sofia, as RT covered in depth in the first installment of our Battle for Bulgaria series. So I'm assuming that this must be Zero Hedge reposting an RT article here where it refers to RT there. And I say I had to look up who this Gurov was, and it said that he was the caretaker prime minister. So he must have just been, he must have taken over when they had these protests back in October, whilst waiting for this election to take place. And he's the one that literally called the European Commission up to start censoring information that was supportive of the person who has now won the election. So I guess that's a triumph in itself that they managed to get past all the censorship. I mean, what do you make of this here, Matt? Have you heard of this Gurov before?
Yeah, they've had a few caretakers. No one really, you know, you have this dependent group of politicians, usually educated in the West. In fact, I think they're all educated in the West. They're more at home in the West than they are in Bulgaria. And they exist, and they make quite a bit of money to impose pro-EU policies onto the country that clearly has been damaged by it. I'll say it again. I can't believe Borisov is still around. I mean, the man who's been driven out and who has shown very, very low electoral results, but still somehow was in office. You know, Yeltsin was the same way in the 90s. That's democracy, according to the West. But it is impressive that this man is elected despite the rapid response system. This shuts down web pages. This shuts down social media accounts that might be pro Radev or nationalist in general or anti-EU in general. It censors news media, and you can get a fine. Platforms can get a fine if they don't go along. We talked about this, what was it, 2 weeks ago concerning Hungary. And yet, Radev still won. And yet his opinion on Russia, you know, what he said to Zelensky is absolutely right. And that's certainly enough for the regime to say that he's pro-Russian. But in their little world, that's this terrible thing. There's no Russian disinformation. Everything he said is true. What he said to Zelensky, what he said domestically. Dialogue with Russia. That was a dialogue with the USSR. when the gulags were in full swing, that wasn't a problem for the West. But the minute Russia, you know, wants control of its own resources and is a nationalist or a Eurasianist state with influence as one of the leaders of resistance, as China and Iran are, Hezbollah, et cetera, you know, that's enough to get them into some serious trouble. This was a landslide victory despite massive censorship. And I think that 31% figure, I didn't look up that poll. I should have. I think that it's probably higher than that. But if it isn't, you know, I know in Romania, pro-Russian views, I have many contacts in Romania, pro-Russian views are very rare. But that really comes from years, you know, now a whole generation of propaganda that Russia is inherently evil, is not European, et cetera. And that's had its impact. You know, propaganda does have an impact, but the rapid response system, yeah, this shows you what the EU really is. They know that they have no right to rule in these parts of the world. They know that they've destroyed countries like Greece. And so the only way that they can function is through manipulation and having guys like Borisov on a leash. And yet, a lot of wins anyway, suggesting that there is a lot of anger in the Bulgarian population. And but that population has to increase, I'm telling you. It's been going down for a while. It's a shame. Again, it was a very highly literate, scientifically minded population like Ukraine. They did lose a lot of people, as you mentioned. But with this economy, that's not going to change.
Well, they get a lot of brain drain. And of course, this rapid response unit, they use the Digital Services Act. So that's how they extort the money from these companies to get them to censor information that they don't like. Of course, they will describe it as misinformation. And it's the same with the Online Safety Act in Britain. Massive fines that they can levy against these social media companies if they don't remove content that can be completely legal content, but just critical of the EU or critical of the British government or critical of immigration policy, critical of the EU's policy in Ukraine. They'll say that is misinformation, and the Digital Services Act comes into play, and there'll be a massive fine of the social media company unless they remove it. So it is indeed a triumph that he managed to defeat all of that and get elected. Well, Gurov's government has also set up a temporary unit within the foreign ministry to counter disinformation and combat hybrid threats, which will be advised by former Bellingcat investigator and anti-Kremlin operative Christo Grozio. And of course, Bellingcat like to masquerade as if they're independent investigators. They're not. They're linked to MI5, MI6, and they obviously promote the liberal Western media's viewpoint. They're not independent investigators at all, and they get funds as well, like in the same way that a non-governmental organization gets funds from governments, but for some reason it's called a non-governmental organization, even though that's where the funding comes from. According to the ministry, this unit will pass reports of supposed malign influences straight to the European Commission, so they're effectively spies for the EU. Radev has called for dialogue with Russia to be restored. The former president has led the newly formed populist party to a landslide victory on a platform of critical dialogue with Brussels and pragmatism towards Moscow. Ask French President Emmanuel Macron, the Prime Minister of Belgium. Ask other European leaders, including German Chancellor Friedrich Merz, who said that this dialogue with Russia must be restored, Radov stated, stressing that engagement is necessary to shape Europe's future security architecture and to halt its deindustrialization. If you want Europe to have real strategic autonomy, Europe must think very seriously about how it will secure its resources, because without energy resources, we cannot talk about competitiveness, he added. And of course, they've just destroyed the German economy by turning down the cheap gas from Russia. That's what this is about. These economies within Europe will all end up being completely destroyed and deindustrialized if they don't make peace with Russia, where they can get the cheap gas from. I mean, that's what it all boils down to. And they refuse to even countenance that and call it disinformation when people say this. What do you make of what's being said here, Matt?
Well, obviously, it's a simple fact. Remember, Russia is far more than gas and oil. It just happens to be its most strategic export. But domestically, Russia, her GDP is about 10%, between 9 and 12% based on oil and gas. It's a very complex economy. So that old myth is dying very, very hard, but it is a very powerful export, and they're very good at it, and it's under the control of the state. The only reason that exists is because Putin arrested Khodorkovsky, who's going to sell many fields to ExxonMobil way back in, I forget what year that was, and he was condemned. And the more he was condemned by the regime, the more popular he became. But everything he's saying is absolutely correct. What your surmise is absolutely correct. What's left there is what industry remains is 1970s computer equipment, automotive parts from the same era. Russia doesn't want Bulgarian goods anymore. The shift to the West was worse than useless. No one wants them either. And she came to the West just in time for the West implosion. It's almost comic. It's a shame. But she has no choice now but to rebuild a partnership with the Russo-Chinese alliance, economically and in terms of security, the Shanghai Cooperation Organization, and to stop the propaganda that has 31% of the population only having pro-Russian views. Now, I don't know if that necessarily means that they don't like Russia, and I don't know if that poll is honest. And everything you said about Bellingcat is absolutely correct. They're a typical NGO. They're financed by governments and corporations. They do what they're told to do. And this, the people around Borisov, they have to be eliminated. I remember back in the 25th anniversary of the overthrow of Todor Zhivkov, the last Soviet dictator there. The 20-year anniversary was met with nothing. No one showed up to the main square in Sofia to take part in the celebrations of Bulgarian independence. And at least back then, pro-Russian views were much higher. When the state was trying to create this fake EU identity, European identity, that's also not accepted. Ukraine is perceived quite properly, as you've seen from the poll, as a failed state. It was a failed state long before the war. Part of this farce too is, when the EU injects money into the Bulgarian economy, it's recorded as growth. Well, it's not growth. Production is zero, even though the prime rate is very high. And corruption is simply, when you have that ruling class, it's inherently corrupt. When you have this oligarchy, oligarchies are conspiratorial. That's how they function. And to break through that shows that maybe that poll isn't right after all. That war in Ukraine has to end. You can't have any more Ukrainians dying. Their population was falling to begin with, and now who knows if she could recover. And of course, the Eastern republics are now part of Russia officially. They'll never return. Of course, Crimea, and all of these places have seen their standard of living increase markedly since they adopted the euro. Adopted the ruble. And the opposite occurs when you adopt the the euro, or at least peg your currency to the euro. And as I said before, the, you know, Bulgaria has this corrupt class attaching itself to Europe just in time for it to absolutely fall apart. And, you know, the sanctions on Russia, as well as the migration problem and so many other things, there is no growth in Europe today. And there's nothing that Bulgaria makes that Europe wants. So hopefully this is just the beginning of a rapprochement with Russia, so Bulgaria can actually come to itself again, start rewarding mothers for having more children, and just rebuilding the country in every respect. That this, hopefully, if that's the case, that would be a wonderful thing.
Well, debt being redefined as growth is unfortunately part of the financial system that we have today. Radev argued that the bloc has undermined itself by pursuing moral leadership in what he described as a world without rules, and now needs more practical policies. To form a government, a party or coalition must win at least 121 seats in the 240-seat National Assembly. Preliminary projections suggest Progressive Bulgaria has already cleared that threshold with an estimated 131 to 134 seats, enough to govern without a coalition. The vote marks Bulgaria's eighth election in 5 years. The country has been in a state of political dysfunction with unpopular caretaker governments since 2021, when Borisov resigned amidst corruption scandals. Although Progressive Bulgaria was formed less than 2 months ago, Radev is a veteran political figure, having served as president from 2017 until stepping down in January to run for prime minister, pledging to break the deadlock and tackle corruption. A vocal critic of the EU's Ukraine policy, Radev has opposed Bulgaria's embargo on Russian energy, blocked a 2022 plan to send armoured vehicles to Ukraine, and argued that there is no military solution to the conflict. So all in all, it seems quite positive for Bulgaria, and things might improve there. Matt, what are your final thoughts on all of this today, please?
Well, my final thoughts are, and I know it's a radical thing to say, but in the past, in places like Latin America, it's precisely this economic situation and this political situation where military coups occur. Now, the election of Radev may be only a first step in that regard, but he still is going to remain a part of the EU. And he says, you know, we're on a European path, as if that's a good thing. I don't know who he's talking to there. He's not talking to the population. The European path is what's destroyed Bulgaria to begin with. So my final thoughts here is that there has to be a radical movement, a radical, actually pro-Russian movement, to create a strong Bulgaria in firm cooperation with the East, and to finally break its ties with the West, which will immediately see, like it's done, every other country that's done that has seen increases in its standard of living. I've seen the lies that the standard of living in Bulgaria has gone up over the years under these terrible governments, and it's simply not true. They make it up. The opposite is true. Ultimately, a military coup, I think the same thing for Ukraine. The military has to finally just take over and say, we're done with this. We're not sending any more boys to die. And the same thing should go for Bulgaria. We're done with the EU. NATO is a paper tiger. They won't be able to do much about it because the premier military in the universe is Russia. And I don't think Bulgaria, as far as her survival is concerned, I don't think she has a choice.
Well, thank you very much for coming on today, Matt. Thank you very much, listeners, for listening. I will be back tomorrow with Grandpa Dan. God bless and hail victory.